Gospel, the risen Lord makes his presence known in the breaking of the bread. The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke.
Glory to you, O Lord.
That very day, the first day of the week, two of Jesus' disciples were going to a village 7 miles from Jerusalem called Emmaus. And they were conversing about all the things that had occurred. And it happened that while they were conversing and debating, Jesus himself drew near and walked with them, but their eyes were prevented from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing as you walk along?" They stopped, looking downcast. One of them, named Clopas, said to him in reply, "Are you the only visitor to Jerusalem who does not know of the things that have taken place there in these days?" And he replied to them, "What sort of things?" They said to him, "The things that happened to Jesus, the Nazarene, who was a prophet mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, how our chief priests and rulers both handed him over to a sentence of death and crucified him. But we were hoping that he would be the one to redeem Israel. And besides all this, it is now the third day since this took place. Some women from our group, however, have astounded us. They were at the tomb early in the morning and did not find his body. And they came back and reported that they had indeed seen a vision of angels who announced that he was alive. Then some of those with us went to the tomb and found things just as the women had described, but him they did not see. And he said to them, 'Oh, how foolish you are, how slow of heart to believe in all the all that the prophets spoke. Was it not necessary that the Christ should suffer these things and enter into his glory?' And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them what referred to him in all the scriptures. As they approached the village to which they were going, he gave the impression that he was going on farther. But they urged him, 'Stay with us, for it is nearly evening and the day is almost over.' So he went to stay with them. And it happened that, while he was with them at table, he took bread, said the blessing, broke it, and gave it to them. With that, their eyes were opened and they recognized him, but he vanished from their sight. Then they said to each other, 'Were not our hearts burning within us while he spoke to us on the way and opened the scriptures to us?' So they set out at once and returned to Jerusalem, where they found gathered together the 11 and those with them who were saying, 'The Lord has truly been raised and has appeared to Simon.' Then the two recounted what had taken place on the way and how he was made known to them in the breaking of the bread."
The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
During the Easter season, the Church frequently reads from the Acts of the Apostles, the early history of the Church recorded by St. Luke. We did it again this morning. This past week, in one of the weekday masses, there was a section read that I thought was very inspirational, also very challenging. It went something like this. It's describing the life of the community living together, this small early community. And the text goes like this. None of them was in need. And it tells how some of the wealthier of the group would sell their land, bring it and put it at the proceeds at the feet of the apostles. The apostles would distribute it all to those who were in need. None of them was in need. Now, the early Christians did that, took care of those in need, responding to the command of the Lord, right? Remember, Jesus had said to them, "I was hungry, you gave me to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me to drink. I was naked, and you clothed me. Forth. So down through the history of the church, from those earliest days in Jerusalem, today's church, that's what we try to do. In response to none of them was in need. That's more difficult for us today in a more complicated world, many more people, but that's our goal. That's why every parish, every Catholic parish throughout the world has various each ministries. In our own parish, for example, we take 2.5% of all the monies that we that are contributed go into an outreach fund. So when people come to us because they need gas money or rent money or food money, we have something to help them with. Out of that same outreach fund, we pay part of the rent of the Corpus Christi food pantry. You know that we have every year brown bag Sundays for them. We have our Christmas gift program, all those sorts of things, so that nobody will be in need. Now, we know, as we gather here this morning, that we, members of St. Joseph, the worker parish, are part of a bigger community, the Catholic Church of New Hampshire. And we're asked not only to take care of those closest to us, but of those further out as well, so that again, nobody will be in need insofar as possible. Over the years, we've done that, particularly in this diocese, through the Catholic Charities appeal. Every year about this time, you know, there was an appeal made to fund the various works of Catholic Charities. But what you may not have realized is when you look back, during the course of the year, in all the parishes of the diocese, there are also other special collections taken up to provide help to those in need. Example, every year we took up a collection that was called the Parish to Parish Collection. This collection was meant to be able to help small rural parishes in the state that couldn't support themselves. Just to give you one example, up in Groveton, New Hampshire, it was a thriving little community, thriving little parish. Some years ago now, the one mill in the town closed. It employed almost everybody in the town. Left the town high and dry. That parish could not exist today if it were not for the parish-to-parish funding, helping them to maintain a priest, pay for their infrastructure. Couldn't exist, that parish, without that kind of help. Every year we took up a collection in all for the seminarians. We spend in this diocese about $500,000 a year educating our seminarians for the future. That means not only their education, but health care and so forth and so on. That couldn't happen without that kind of a collection. We took up a collection every year priests of the diocese, priests who have served their whole life, the church, they retire, they continue to need health care, housing, some kind of a living stipend. That couldn't happen without that kind of a collection. We do have a collection here for the missionaries, New Hampshire missionaries abroad. We've been for years supported a mission in Cartago, Colombia. A New Hampshire woman has spent her whole life down there, literally, taking care of the poor and the elderly in Cartago. That couldn't happen without that kind of a collection. So, over the course of a year, we took up around the diocese a number of collections besides Catholic Charities so that nobody would be in need insofar as possible. This year, for the first time, Bishop Labashi has decided to join all of those particular collections together into one main campaign called the New Hampshire Catholic Campaign. One body, many parts. So that campaign actually began last year with half the parishes in the diocese. We were not among them. We took up the Catholic campaign last year. But this year, all the parishes together are joining into that one campaign so that Catholic Charities and all these other collections are pulled into one major drive. The thing to understand about this is that when we think about Catholic Charities, we perhaps have had a little bit of an incomplete understanding of how Catholic Charities funds itself. The drive that they took up every year funded about one-third of their budget. They had to go out and look for grants, direct mail appeals, and so forth, and they continue to do that. But what this new drive will do is this. New drive will guarantee the Catholic Charities the average amount of money they raised every year in their other appeal. So, for example, if you gave every year $100 to Catholic Charities and they collected $1.3 on average, $1.3 on average from this new campaign. But all the other collections are now grouped together with the Catholic Charities. So this coming week, you're going to get in the mail, everybody who's registered in the parish will get in the mail, a letter from Bishop Lepashi asking you to participate in this campaign, providing you with an envelope. You can make a pledge, you send it right into the address on the envelope, bring it back to church, we'll send it in for you. You can go online and pledge online. Just be sure when you do that, if you go to our website, there's a link. Make sure when you do that, you indicate that it's coming from St. Joseph the Worker Parish. So the important thing here to remember is, again, that this new format is done for administrative purposes. It's easier to administer it this way, all those individual collections, but also in the hope that when we see it all together, we'll be encouraged to even be more generous than we were in the past. You know, every year, all these other these outreach programs, they all increase in need and in cost. So if you can do a little bit more this year than you've done in the past, that would be wonderful. But remember, when you make your pledge, you're not just pledging to Catholic Charities. All these other collections that were taken up during the year are included. So what you need to do is think about what you gave to Catholic Charities, what you gave to the retired priest, what you gave to the seminarians, what you gave to the outreach. Pull all that together into one pledge. Now, one thing I would want to make clear to you is that this campaign does not fund in any way the administrative costs of the diocese. None of this money goes to fund the bishop's office or the cost of administering the diocese. That's funded in a different way. All of these monies go directly to the programs for which they are intended. And every year, starting next year, you'll receive, everybody who participates, directly from the diocese, a kind of a chart like this that will show you how the monies were distributed in that previous year. For example, last year, with half the parishes participating, 31% of the money collected went to Catholic Charities, 14% went to the priest retirement fund, 13% went to seminarian fund, 10% went to that parish-to-parish support fund, 7% went to the New Hampshire missionaries abroad, and so forth. So every year you'll get a report as to how those monies were distributed. One final little thing to keep in mind. Many of these collections that were taken up over the years, even though we didn't maybe realize it, were assessed collections. In other words, the diocese assessed the parishes a certain amount, which they were expected to meet, so that those programs could continue. With this New Hampshire Catholic campaign, the same thing will be true. We are assessed. The assessment is 10% of the average parish income for the previous 3 years. So they take the 3 years, not counting the COVID year, which of course was not normal. Previous 3 years, what's the average income of the parish? Our assessment for this campaign is 10%. That means for us in this parish, about $51,000. Now, when you look at what we gave to Catholic Charities and these other collections over the years, if everybody contributes even the same amount, we'll come pretty close to meeting our assessment. If for some reason, as I hope would be true, we give it a little bit more and we exceed that $51,000, whatever we exceed it by will stay in the parish. So So 100% of anything over 51,000 will stay in the parish. We can use it for our own outreach purposes. So, as you think about what you can do this year, I'd ask you to pray about it and do the best you can. If we shouldn't meet the assessment, $51,000, we've got to come up with that money some other way, out of savings or somehow. So just consider what you can do. I conclude with one final little point. Remember when Jesus tells the story of the Good Samaritan? We're all familiar with that story. The lawyer asks him, "Who is my neighbor?" Because Jesus tells the story about the guy getting beaten up on the side of the road and so forth. But remember at the end of the story, Jesus does something very interesting. He says to the man who asked him the question, not who was your neighbor, but who was neighbor to the one who got beaten up. Jesus changes the focus. He's not saying to that man asking the question, that guy that got beaten up was your neighbor. What he says to him is, who was a neighbor? Who acted like a neighbor? And the man, of course, says, well, the one who showed mercy on him. And Jesus says to him and to us, then you go and do likewise. You be neighbor. You go and do likewise. So that, as much as is possible, no one will be in need. May God bless you.